the last thing you said is really something that motivates me the most. It's not better than any award or any recognition is seeing somebody doing something better than you, right? And then you help, not that you taught them, but you facilitated, you have something to do with that. And that's nothing better than somebody rising and shining and achieving their full potential and doing something better than you could ever have done, right?
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Hi-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy-D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Improve bone health and lifetime productivity with Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. BinSentry, the most trusted feed monitoring solution in the world. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet. The National Pork Board is committed to improving the health of the U.S. swine herd. Learn more at porkcheckoff.org.
Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers.
You're listening to the Swine It Podcast Show, where curiosity meets the cutting edge of swine production. I'm your host, Dr. Clayton Johnson, and our goal is to bring you real conversations with the people that shape the future of pig farming. From the barns to the boardrooms, we're going to chat with industry leaders who aren't afraid to get their boots dirty and push the industry forward. Whether you're listening to us while you're driving between sites or catching up on emails at your desk, we really thank you for letting us join you during your day and be your go-to place for practical conversations that empower better pig production. Now, without further ado, let's get into today's episode. It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Daniel Inhares to the show. Daniel joins us with a unique talent. Daniel's got a wonderful ability to lead a large and very diverse team of swine researchers and graduate students who take on some of the most difficult pig health challenges that we deal with today. And I've been blessed to get to know Daniel as a man who cares deeply about those that he works with. And he's a leader who is tireless and selfless in a lot of ways. He's selfless, certainly in his efforts to make everyone around him more productive and more successful. Dr. Daniel Inhares currently serves as the professor and the Lloyd Anderson Endowed Chair of Veterinary Medicine at the Department of Veterinary Diagnostic and Production Animal Medicine at Iowa State University, where Daniel leads the ISU Swine Medicine Education Center Field Epi team. And if you haven't heard of the Field Epi team, you're going to today, because that group is really known for their cutting edge work in swine health, in particular their work with PRRS and disease control strategies. It's not just my opinion. I think it's the opinion of many that Daniel and his group are widely recognized for the impactful research that they do. In particular, Daniel specifically, his leadership of graduate students and the collaborations they have with producers and veterinarians like myself that work worldwide trying to help make pigs healthier and more productive. The quality of the Field Epi team's work is just as impressive as the quantity of their work. And I think, simply put, nobody's doing more to help with pig health than the Field Epi team. Daniel, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here, my friend.
Thank you, Clayton. Always a pleasure to spend time with you. And thanks for the introduction. I never had that long introduction, so not sure if I deserve all that, but I'm having fun here. I can tell you that.
Leticia put together all the notes for me. She wrote all the background. In all seriousness, Daniel, you know, you have developed a reputation as doing really good work, and not just doing good work on your own. I mean, you did a lot of really good work when you were doing your own PhD and when you were leading research projects as the lead researcher. But now you lead a team that does a lot of work. And I want to unpack that for the audience. You know, what does it take to do both of those things? Because I'm sure there's different skills when it's just you doing your tasks versus getting other people to do those same tasks. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about your background. And Daniel, the first question I've got for you is, tell us about your journey into swine and veterinary medicine. And in particular, you know, which one of those things did you find first? Did you find the career path of veterinary medicine interesting and explore that and then stumble into pigs? Or did you get an opportunity to experience pig production first and then kind of stumble into veterinary medicine from there?
It was actually veterinary medicine first. My dad is a vet. He's an epidemiology infectious diseases professor back home in Brazil, and I grew up watching him going to clinics, to farms, and that did inspire me to go to vet medicine. It was also around the time when the Dolly the sheep, I don't know if you remember, the first cloned animal came along, and that fascinated me. So I wanted to do something with vet medicine, genetics, biology. And then I've actually found opportunity with the swine in the swine world when I was in year four of veterinary medicine in Brazil. It's a 5-year program. There is no college. You go straight to the university, and it's a 5-year program. For the last couple of years, it's more hands-on type of thing. And I found with a professor, Yuri Sobestianski, a guy mixed Brazilian, mixed a German, and he was needing an intern to go to farms. And I went to a pig farm. It was a 3,000 feral to finish operation. And that clicked. Say, this is it. This is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my career.
The National Pork Board partners with producers, veterinarians, state pork associations, and others across the swine industry to improve the lives of pigs and people. Through collaboration, education, and support for ongoing research, NPB drives progress and helps strengthen the industry's future. Learn more at porkcheckoff.org.
What was it that excited you about that farrow to finish operation? Was it the interactions with the people there, the statistics of a pig farm, kind of the population medicine approach? What did you find intriguing about it?
Yeah, what I really liked about it was the population concept, where veterinary medicine is so big, right? But up to that point, I was focused on clinics, on pets, and one individual animal. But then the swine world, it was all about numbers. How about a large population? And in some instances, populations of populations, right? How can one decision influence not only one animal, and not only one barn, but multiple barns of populations? And then you track that over with numbers. And I like the numbers, right? I'm kind of a geek a nerd in that regard. And so watching those numbers as they move based on the decisions you made, that got me.
Were you going to that farm with kind of an extension role where you had something to train or something to educate them on, or was it a research project that led you to that farm to collect some data?
No, it was just an internship. I was pretty much shadowing the different sections there, farrowing house, gestation, nursery, finishing. And so I didn't really have one task to do. My job was really to be exposed to the swine industry and tag along and help people in the farm with whatever they were doing.
Well, how did you then find the opportunity to do research or the first kind of exposure to research that lit the fire that, you know, has eventually burned to get you to where you are today?
For swine related, I think my first type of, it was not quite research, but investigation type of thing, was working with Pig Champ. And at that time, it was the old Pig Champ. I'm sure you're going to remember the DOS system where you have to type your queries, right, and navigate through the reports. And then while working with some of those farms, the challenge was to figure out, hey, what's going on here? Get an X-ray of why is the farm not producing as well? Is it a gilt problem? Is it an old sow problem? Is it what subpopulation is most at risk and has most opportunities to improve? So just digging through some of those database management, I think that was how it was called, and investigating, that was something that triggered me, you know, and I really liked that challenge. The answer is here in this box here in this mm-hmm. keyboard, and then you go to the farm and you double check what you saw, right? And so when you see the numbers matching the clinics and vice versa, that was something that sparked me.
Yeah, when you can use the numbers to shine a light in the black box for a producer and help them to demystify a problem that they have and kind of hone in on, well, if we can make this part of the population better, we will actually make the overall problem better. That can be really rewarding when you see kind of the light bulbs go on the farm and people all of a sudden maybe have hope. They have an idea that, oh, we can get out of this problem and we don't just have to live with this situation forever.
Yeah, and one of those early ones problems was parity. There was a huge parity 2 dip.
Yep.
And so the hypothesis is there's something wrong with those gilts. So let's go back to the farm and watch those gilts. And sure enough, you see a lot of opportunities, either of feeding patterns or heat check or time in the crate before breeding them. And some of those low-hanging fruits, but all kind of driven and shown by the reports, right? So you can marry those two things, and that's rewarding, as you say.
The pigs don't lie, and if we measure the pigs appropriately, if the reports are accurate, I mean, it will take you to the problem. Whether we can solve it or not, it's a different question, but it will guide you to the right place on the farm. Daniel, let's talk a little bit about leadership, because today you probably don't get to dig into as many production records as you would like to. You've got a role where you manage a lot of people and you do less individual contributions, like going to that farm or working on that pig champ project. What did your journey into leadership look like when it started? How did you first get the opportunity to get exposed to leadership? Ultimately, what was interesting about that? Kind of like I asked you about what was interesting about the pig farm. What in those early experiences tripped your trigger and said, oh, man, I can get a lot of satisfaction out of seeing somebody else do that same kind of work helping and supporting farms?
Yeah, and before we go there, I think the last thing you said is really something that motivates me the most. It's not better than any award or any recognition is seeing somebody doing something better than you, right? And then you help, not that you taught them, but you facilitated, you have something to do with that. And that's nothing better than somebody rising and shining and achieving their full potential and doing something better than you could ever have done, right? And so going back to my first opportunities was still back in the barn when I was my first job was with Agroceres PIC, this genetic company in back home in Brazil. And in my early days as a trainee, as they would say, would be to go to the farm and work in the different sections. So I would circle around between the gestation, the farrowing, the finishing, the different sections, and I would have the opportunity to first learn and then supervise some of those teams. And then across over the years, I rose to be a farm manager, then supervisor of other farm managers. And so in those early days, I could see what we just talked about, right? The power of when you empower people, when you not teach them exactly what to do, but what's the end goal, so that they are passionate about the end goal and the outcome and not specifically how you want them to do, because sometimes they find better ways. But if they understand what should the outcome be, then, and if you give them the opportunity to be creative and independent as thinkers and develop their own solutions, that was and you start see things happening. So yeah, my first opportunities were back in farms.
Daniel, you've got a unique perspective. You mentioned that for you, your first experiences with veterinary medicine and on the farm were back home in Brazil. So you have seen leaders get developed in the United States. You've seen leaders get developed in Brazil. You've seen researchers get developed in the U.S. You've seen researchers get developed in Brazil. How does your international perspective shape your view of those things? What are maybe the things that you appreciate when it comes to leadership or when it comes to research? Because you've done it in different parts of the globe, in different industries, in different cultures. And you may say nothing, you know, like the secrets to being a good leader are the same in Brazil as they are in the U.S. and same with a researcher. But give for those of us that have, you know, only grown up and stayed in one place, give us your perspective on being a researcher, being a leader. Is it different in one culture versus the other? Can you learn things in one area that you really can't learn in the other? And it's really valuable to have the experience in both countries because you're not going to get all of it if you're just in one the whole time.
Yeah, good question. Got to think about that. And of course, again, not here to provide a recipe for leadership, but I can talk about some of those skills of people I think they made a difference, right? At least for me, and if not for the industry. And some of those traits, regardless of where you are or where you're from, right? I've had leaders of different nationalities and different backgrounds, but they all come with this ability of true listening. Some people ask questions, but they're already thinking about the next question and they're not really listening. And so try to listen. And even if you're listening, it does not make sense for you. A lot of times it doesn't. Try to think about where they are coming from, the other side's coming from. Maybe they have a point. Maybe you are wrong, right? Maybe you should change your perspective. And so trying to be an active listener, I think it makes a difference. They are also those big leaders, right? To think about, it's hard to start talking about names because then you leave people behind, but Pat Halbert, Roger May, Motsi, Tore Morel, they all have a purpose, right? They have a vision. They don't just wake up and do what, you know, they don't go with the wind. They know where they work toward some strategic goals. They have some directives. They have some a purpose, and so they're driven by some of those goals, and so they have a purpose. What else? And then I think another key trait is creativity. Sometimes a lot of times you do reach a roadblock, don't you? And then you're working a project, you don't see how you reach a roadblock, and sometimes you gotta be creative and you gotta work around the solution. And maybe you did have a plan, you did have an SOP, so to speak, but you gotta improvise. And so you gotta think about some other creative ways of getting there. And again, don't be super focused on the method you're working on or the tools you're working on. Be focused on where you want to get. And sometimes you gotta change the method. Maybe you gotta change the plan as long as you get there safe and sound and in a sustainable fashion. Go for it and allow yourself to be creative.
I think that's a real challenge in our industry. And you and I, Daniel, have had the opportunity to work together all over the world talking to pig producers. And pig producers, sometimes change is tough. But to stay true to our principles, we do have to change our tactics. And a silly example I always try to use when a producer is maybe being a little stubborn about change is I say, you know, our father's farm when they were young, our grandfather's farm, it had the same goal of our breeding farm. Breed the best boar to the best sow, right? Make that combination. And our grandfather, they did it with natural mating, right? They had actual boars that they put in pens with wean sows and said, okay, boys, you know, go breed them. But we eventually developed an opportunity with artificial insemination to do a different way, right? A different tactic. And switching to artificial insemination was actually staying true to the grandfather's principle of do the best breeding, right? Make the best mate that you possibly can. And for producers that were stubborn about that change, for producers that said, no, we've always done it this way on this farm, they left a lot of opportunity behind. And those producers probably aren't in business anymore. So I think what you said is very true. And oftentimes it takes a visionary leader, a Pat Halber, a Monse, a Roger, somebody that will point at that vision of the new tactic and say, look, that's where we need to go. And my next question for you, Daniel, would be, you know, like the leaders always have that vision, like you said. Where do you think the Pat Halbers of the world get their vision from? Like, if you want to be the next Pat Halber, are those individuals, is it intrinsic in them, right? Is it just something that they are able to creatively develop that other people cannot? Or do you think they read, they talk, that their environment fuels the development of that vision? Or maybe it's some of both.
Yeah, I really think it's some of both. I do believe in gut feeling and instinct, but those things, they're never alone, right? If Halbur was not as connected with the industry as he always has been, you wouldn't have had the visions he had, right? And so talking with people, being out there, understanding the needs, right? And understanding the needs and then understanding how can you leverage your resources, your team, your infrastructure to meet those needs of the industry, right? It can't be selfish. It can't be just how can I make my team, my university, the best of the world. You gotta connect the dots, and it should be best in an area that you are helping somebody to also reach their true potential. And when you make those win-win or triple win partnerships, then great things happen. So I do think it's a combination of networking, understanding the needs, and then understanding your capabilities, and then right linking those so that you can be true to your core business while helping the industry, the clients, the stakeholders.
When it comes to raising healthy, strong swine, the environment makes all the difference. Pancopia provides better environmental conditions for swine so that they can grow faster and more efficiently. Grow smarter, grow stronger, and watch your profits soar. Pancopia, the future of swine care starts here. Visit pancopia.com today to learn more.
One of the things I've always respected about you, Daniel, and you mentioned this before when you talked about the need to listen and the need to really listen, and that's your humility. You join a meeting not as Daniel and Harris with this huge resume, which you have, right? A distinguished professor and researcher. But you join meetings as Daniel, the guy who's here to help, right? The guy who's here to learn and the guy who's here to support. And the people you mentioned as good mentors, Monse, Roger, Pat, they share that kind of same approach where they are humble in their contributions. My question to you is, how do you strike that balance of being a leader who has a vision that is unique and different, and almost you need confidence bordering somewhat on arrogance to propose it? You know what I'm saying? Like to put it out there in the first place, and then even to nudge and convince people, no, I know that maybe you don't see this way today, but trust me, that's where we need to go. How do you balance the need to have confidence in yourself to suggest a vision that's new and different and that people are not going to maybe be comfortable with immediately, yet at the same time also be so humble to accept the feedback when people are sharing their concerns or sharing their perspective on this vision you're proposing, to truly listen in that situation? How do you as an individual find balance in both of those things?
Great question, right? At one of the AASV meeting, I heard Gordon Sprunk. He talked about leadership. And then one thing he said was, leaders don't push. Then I listened to that, say, wow, I got to think about that for a second, right? And then I talked with him about that later. And I think he was right. I mean, you come with some proposed solutions or mission or things like, and you outline the plan. If it sticks, it's because the idea is ready. If it doesn't stick, you should go back and understand why these people didn't go for it. Right. For example, now I at our meeting here, the PERS management workshop, we talked about why are we not being more aggressive with PERS control and regional controls and coordinated controls to win that battle together and not as single producers or single individuals. Right. Is it happening yet? I don't know that it's happening at the speed that we would like, but maybe it's because our job is to go back to the drawing board, go back to the stakeholders, go back to the Clayton Johnsons of the world and have a conversation to understand how can we better this plan so that the industry picks up more with more excitement, right? This challenge of fight back with the tools we already have. You could argue those are not going to be the silver bullets, but together, those those can help. So I think it's a balance between you propose, if people like it, great. If people don't like it, I think you got to bring back as a homework and understand, why did that idea not fly? And so what can I learn about it? How can I perfect about it? Maybe it's not ready. Maybe the idea is not ready, right? So gotta bring back. I always try to bring back and learn from such experiences.
What I look at it is, maybe the idea is ready, but the idea doesn't have enough evidence, or at least not enough evidence that's been communicated to make it convincing to other people. And I mentioned arrogance and confidence before. And one of the things I always try to tell my kids, Daniel, is the difference between arrogance and confidence is confidence has receipts. Confidence has evidence. You know what I'm saying? Confidence is bringing a producer a PERS management plan where I've got research demonstrating the value proposition. And your team, the Field Epic team, I want to spend some time talking about those folks because they generate a lot of that evidence. When I go to a producer and I'm trying to convince them to do something, whether it's the POM project or, you know, some of Giovanni's research with, sequencing techniques and strategies, that's the evidence that I'm bringing to try and promote confidence behind my vision of what the farm should do. To do that good work with the Field Epi team, it starts with recruiting. And you've got a unique challenge where you're often recruiting international students and not necessarily students that you've known from internships at Iowa State. You know what I'm saying? You haven't had this ability to get to know those people by working with them one-on-one for a long time. Like maybe we classically think of a career pipeline where you get to know somebody in undergrad, you watch them develop, and then you bring them in. So my question is, for pig producers, they live in a world where they recruit a lot of people internationally, and they have some of the same challenge where I need to hire somebody. I've got some really good candidates, but it's just maybe a web meeting that I get to interact with them. What tips do you have, Daniel, for people that are in that hiring situation? They need to hire good talent, but they aren't going to be able to pick from people that they've known for years and years and years. You know what I'm saying? And they need to look at the resume. They get a few short interactions, probably not even in person, and then they got to make a call. How do you work through that to get such good talent on your Field Epi team?
Yeah, and then as I think back and reflect, right, I've recruited for farm job for a technical services team here at the university for graduate students, faculty for the department. And I think one of the, and I, to this day too, I recruiting, I agree with you, it's something that's core. It's super important. So I do spend maybe some 10% of my time recruiting. So watching applications, interviewing people, talking with people. And I think it's, you got to think about what are they going to do, and are they, you don't want to say, yeah, I'm just going to recruit the best people in the world. I mean, you try to do that, but in fact, you are trying to recruit somebody who you can see that has the skill sets to be successful in that position you're recruiting for, right? So think about what this individual has done, look at their background. Do they have evidence that they did something similar before? If so, it's a bonus point for them, right? And I, going back to what you're talking about, networking, I think that's key. At least for me, it is key. I don't say never, but I don't like recruiting if I don't have a reference of somebody who I trust, who has worked with them or they've watched those, even if it's in the sideline. You mentioned, right, our global work. Every time we travel, I try to I turn on my recruiting kind of hat on and be watching people, right? And sometimes you are in places that you've never been before. Maybe you will never be there again, but it's an opportunity to find somebody. And so you gotta take advantage of the networking you have, the trips you make, and be watching for people. And maybe you're not recruiting at that time, but at least you now know that even if it's not for our own team, if somebody else is recruiting, say, hey, I've seen this individual here not long ago, and that may be a good match for you. So we're always helping to find the surrounding teams here to be successful in their recruiting too.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Vaxinova, formulate to your needs, custom-made vaccines.
AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance.
Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance.
SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions.
Uniferon 200 from Pharmacosmos, the iron dextrin for baby pigs, which promotes faster growth.
Better production performance starts with Eastman Choline Chloride. Visit eastman.com.
Sunhe is a professional solution provider for enzymes, probiotics, and functional additives. We offer customized formulas to target nutritional issues in livestock and maximize the utility of animal feed. Find us on sunhe.com for more information.
When you meet an exciting young person who, you know, is passionate and you think to yourself, this young lady or this young man, they're going to do some things. What advice do you give them right now about the opportunities for them in swine medicine and swine research? Do you suggest that there's maybe one topic that's got a long runway ahead of it and is going to need a lot of research and people can make careers out of? Ultimately, you know, what advice do you give to those young professionals that want to enter the swine industry or the area of academic research?
Well, for those interested in research, those that are young and interested in research, typically my advice to them is great that you're interested in the research, but I would strongly encourage you to go work in the industry first, at least ideally for a couple of years, so you understand the terminology, you understand how the wheel turns before you want to change the wheel, right? And so also so that you develop some of the soft skills, the communication, working with teams. You're not very seldomly you're going to work alone. And so the getting some experience with your hands dirty and the boots on the ground and developing some of those soft skills, I think that's going to be super important for your future academic career. Even if you don't want to be retired as a professor, but you want to get a graduate degree or a research degree, I think it's important to have that field experience first. So that would be my encouragement. Hard to write, figure out how to change the wheel if you don't know how it turns.
Yeah, and the soft skills. At the end of the day, you're going to have to get work done through others. And a lot of times those people are not going to formally report to you. Those people you don't have hire and fire power over. It's a farm you're working with to collect data. And you have to convince the farm that it's really important data to collect. And it is worth the extra effort they have to do. And if you don't have those soft skills of communication, of empathy, and really just supporting them and trying to help make them be successful, you're not going to be very effective. If you just march in and hand them the protocol, you're probably not going to get what you want out of it.
Right.
Daniel, it's been a pleasure to get to chat with you. You've been very generous with your time. I've known you for longer than either one of us probably want to tell people at this point because we're both getting older. But it's always a pleasure to get to chat with you. And I've learned some things from you here in this discussion, your background, your thoughts and your approach, and certainly have great respect for what you've done. And I don't think there's any coincidence that you've been successful. I mean, everything that you described is a recipe for being successful in our industry, no matter what role you want to be in. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing all that with our listeners.
My pleasure, Clayton. And likewise, you are a great asset here for our industry here in this country and the global industry. We've been together in some different places, and I always learn from you watching you talk with people and your insights, your experience. You are super generous sharing. It's something I learned with you is you're not afraid to share what you know, right? And be ready to help people and it's a two-way road, right? I think if you're sharing, people are going to share back with you. And that's something I learned. I learn with you.
Well, in the spirit of sharing, Daniel, let's pitch your website. That is one thing I wanted to make sure we left the audience with, the Field Epi Team's website, because you guys have everything there from diagnostic calculators, information on the POMP project. I'll let you give a little bit of spiel for it. But if folks are interested in learning what the Field Epi Team is working on, how do they go about that?
Yeah, welcome to visit fieldepi.org. It's that simple. And like you said, there will be some calculators for sample size, especially for monitoring, right? If you're using processing fluids, family oral fluids, whatever you're using, pooling, no pooling. And so there will be some calculators there that Henry put together for us. And like you said, some dedicated websites for some of the web field epi's flagship projects, including the POMP, the PROSPER, of course, the SDRS, and the PRIME project with you guys, and some of the research highlights on biosecurity, on monitoring, on disease control. So there will be a little bit of everything we do there. And if people like, reach back to us. We'll be happy to share more details of any of those projects listed or any of those papers or research initiatives that are done.
Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate you sharing that and appreciate all the work you and the Field Epi team do. It's appropriate now, Daniel, that we thank the audience. Thanks all of those folks who have joined us here on the SwineNet podcast show, where our goal is to dive deep and help you stay informed, educated, and ultimately inspired in your own journey in the swine industry. If you enjoyed our episode today, please share it with your team. Think about somebody that could benefit from Daniel's experience. Think about somebody who's young in their career and is considering either leadership or research or maybe some combination of both. Share this episode with them. It takes one click and you're sharing knowledge. You're doing the same thing Daniel and I shared that we really try to do with producers all over the world. So subscribe wherever you get your podcast, then leave us a review if you've got a second. You didn't pay anything for this this episode, so that's the only thing that I would ask is help us with the algorithms that helps get this message out to more and more people. It helps more producers and more swine professionals discover the show and the valuable contributions that people like Daniel have. For Dr. Daniel Linares, I'm Dr. Clayton Johnson. Thanks for spending some time with us today, and we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.